Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland podcast. So we have a fun show for you today. This is going to be a very Juve-focused show. If you've been listening to us for a while, you know that we don't cover Juve quite as much as other places just because the team gets so much coverage. But today we wanted to talk a little bit about this reset that Juve had during the January transfer window. So Alex and I are going to talk a little bit at the top about Kulusevski and how Vlahovic changes the needle for Juve in Serie A. And we have two superb guests. We have our usual Juve correspondent, Riccardo Pratesi, who used to cover them for Gazzetta dello Sport during the Conte era. And then we have a first-time guest. I have a few aces up my sleeve for this year, bringing on some new people. Riccardo Spada, who is one of my favorite people on Twitter when it comes to Juve fans. He made his Calcioland debut. We tried to hit Juve from a bunch of different angles with the two guests. And then, of course, with us, the international break coming to an end and Serie A coming back, we have a thousand names, game picks, and, of course, with the data be coming up today, and we'll do a special part of the pod for our patrons. Before we get though to Juve, I just want to take a moment to really say thank you to the great support we've received on the pod recently. Last month has been really excellent for us, and I don't think it's really driven too much by the transfer window, which historically has always been good to us, but I really appreciate all the support from people. We have a bunch of new patrons. We've had some awesome reviews on iTunes and Spotify, which I really appreciate, and people leaving great tweets on the show. So I really appreciate your support. But enough about us. Let's get to Calcio. So Alex, I want to ask you this. I have a lot of thoughts on Spurs bringing in two former Juve players during the window. Rodrigo Bentancur, but I think the one that stands out is Kulusevski, a player we've talked a lot on the pod. So let me ask you this. I have a lot of thoughts on how people have perceived this transfer, but I'm curious from your perspective, try to not be too tough on Spurs as you normally are. Just tell us a little bit what the reaction was to the news that Paratici at Spurs was bringing on these two Juve players, and particularly Kulusevski.
Yeah, I will try and not be too hard on Spurs. But I do just want to say, before I'm completely objective, as a Chelsea fan, and really just a Premier League fan that's not a Spurs fan, it was quite funny because their window, David, I'm not sure how much Serie A fans were paying attention, but their window is once again an abomination up until the very end. They were getting rejected by players left and right, like left and right. They tried for Luis Diaz of FC Porto. He, of course, eventually went to Liverpool. They tried for Adama Traore, who, by the way, Antonio Conte, like, so openly wanted. It's so obvious. And Adama Traore would probably be pretty good as a right wing back for Antonio Conte, wouldn't he? He's like a better version of Victor Moses or a lot of guys that Conte has had. But Adama Traore went to Barcelona. So it did start to feel like, wow, are we already getting Conte not getting his targets at a club like Spurs, who are famous for not getting their targets? I mean, David, my good friend Willian famously rejected Tottenham, and it just seems like that's what happens to Tottenham. But here comes my objectivity. It was going so poorly for Tottenham that I thought, well, this is just going to continue. I think they even got rejected by a teenager, someone they were going for that wouldn't even really be a first team player. It was going so poorly, it just felt like, well, that's just going to be a horrible window for Tottenham. But then to get Bentancur and specifically Kulusevski, who of course might not have torn Serie A apart when he went to Juventus, but still is 21 years old and has a lot of upside. And I'm sure just Conte, from being in Serie A, knowing of him, could have plans for him, could really get the best out of him. So that's not bad. That's not bad at all. I will say, because you often ask me for like the reaction within the Premier League circle here, I wouldn't say there were a lot of Premier League fans really applauding Tottenham, because on one hand, I'm not sure that those players, at least as of right now, are needle movers, David. They could be, because Conte is also someone who could turn an even average player into a really impactful player in his team. And I think Kulusevski definitely has above average talent. And I like Bentancur. I don't necessarily think he's going to blaze the Premier League apart here. But Conte could definitely lift these guys up. And specifically on Kulusevski, like maybe he does become a really good player for Tottenham. The one thing is, I don't know, maybe you know better than I do, Conte was really passionate about getting a guy like this in that he knows of, then that, if I was a Spurs fan, laugh, that would actually make me quite excited. I was just speaking the other day about how if Conte gets a player that he really didn't want, and I'm not saying that is Kulusevski, I'm kind of believing that he did, especially, like I said, with that Serie A familiarity, and a lot of people would probably want the upside of a Kulusevski, but when Conte gets a player that he doesn't really want, famously Michy Batshuayi a few years ago when Conte was appointed Chelsea manager and pretty much Chelsea had just signed Michy Batshuayi and it looked like it was for Conte, like, here's your first signing. But no, it was a complete board and scouting signing. And Conte was incensed with Batshuayi and things went completely the wrong way. I assume that's not the case here. So if this is someone that Conte wants, then you know what? He could mix in really well with a Harry Kane and a Heung-min Son and some of the things they're doing over there. I'm not sure Bergwijn is really long for the team because he almost moved back to the Eredivisie. Lucas Moura, you know, maybe they got something there. Also, you know, Dele Alli's out the door, so with Bentancur, there's probably minutes there. There's probably a role to win, if you will. So, you know what? I'll be totally fair. For Spurs standard, they did pretty well, and I think it might even be an insult to say they salvaged the window, because put it this way, David, let's change perception, right? Let's say that we didn't know of them getting rejected by players for much of the window, and instead, at the start of the window, they got Bentancur and Kulusevski. Would we look at it differently? I probably would. I'd be like, whoa, they got their targets. Pretty good. Pretty neat business there from Tottenham. So I also do think when players are signed in a window really could change perception and how you view it. So to just wrap up the question, I don't think Premier League fans were going overboard applauding Tottenham because it kind of felt like they were backup options, even if they weren't, if that makes any sense. So yeah, that's my take. Not bad. Not bad. I can't give them much more than that, but not bad, David. What do you make of the move?
A lot of thoughts, and a great job, Alex, as usual. So, first off, Kulusevski at Parma was without a doubt one of my favorite players in Serie A in recent years. I thought he was absolutely devastating. I would have bet the house he was going to be a success at Juve, also because he seemed to have the mentality, at least on the surface, for a club like Juve. You know, a lot of you guys know Fabrizio Romano is the transfer guru, but he knows a ton about calcio too. He has the biggest fantasy football calcio site in Italy. He really knows his game, and he was sky high on Kulusevski as a player. Him and I used to talk a little bit offline about him. So it just goes to show, I mean, I've taken a lot of humble pie a lot of times when I'm really convinced of something, either a transfer or how a player fits in. You just never know until it happens. I think, you know, physically and, you know, his pace and all, to me, he seems at least physically very well suited for the Premier League. And I think Conte is just a perfect manager for him right now. The type of role that he plays, like Kulusevski's great on the counterattack. And I think, you know, he is good with players like this to kind of get him over the edge. You know, look at what he did with Bastoni, Barella at Inter, really elevated them. And as you said, Kulusevski's really, really young still. There's a lot of upside there. I was really fascinated, though, by the perception of this deal, because I heard from both Spurs fans who were, some of them, quite disappointed and were like, Paratic is basically an agent for Juve helping him out. And the reaction was the same from a lot of non-Juve fans in Serie A. They're like, here we go again. Juve always seems to have these things work out for them this way. They have their former sporting director at another club. And look, you know, Juve got a very good deal for Kulusevski. So the terms are, it's a mandatory buy clause if Spurs make it to the CL, or he has 15 appearances as a starter. It's a €10 million loan fee until 23. And then the buy clause is worth 40 million next summer, 35 this summer. So loan fees already really good. If either of those options kick in, Juve is making a nice plusvalenza on Kulusevski, and they are getting basically more than what they spend for him just on cash outlay. And look, obviously Kulusevski is really young, so the fact that he's 2 years older than when Juve purchased him, because they pulled it off in the January window and he joined later, not too much of a factor. He's obviously still so young that he has massive resale value. But it's not like Kulusevski set the world on fire at Juve. I thought he was quite disappointing. And I think, you know, if you watch that All or Nothing documentary on Amazon, you kind of have the perception that he was actually really good his first season. And I'll tell you, as someone who really, really wanted to see him succeed, that was not the case. So Juve ends up doing really well. And depending on how you feel about Juve, you're going to, you know, emphasize or de-emphasize Paratici's role. If you're someone who doesn't like Juve, you're going to say, here we go, the fix is in. Basically, by taking Bentancur, he allowed Juve to get Zakaria, who's probably an upgrade and fits them tactically better. The terms for Bentancur were pretty good, but the terms for Kulusevski were better. And if you really wanted to be cynical, you would say that maybe they structured it this way because Juve owed a significant resale percentage on Bentancur. So both players in the deal, you know, if you were cynical, you were like, oh, maybe you made the Kulusevski fee a little bit higher and Bentancur lower, so they less goes out there. Again, it depends. If you're a Juve fan, you're going to say, no, that's not the case. You're going to say Paratici genuinely likes these players, and that's why he brought them in. And look, you know, it wasn't long ago, and I would say before the Ramsey Rabiot Bosman deal, which kind of became a little bit more of a trademark for Paratici, he was rightfully known as one of the best scouts in Europe discovering players. Like, I think in Conte's first book, the way they describe how they went about getting Vidal, that was all Paratici. Conte barely knew who he was. Marotta probably didn't, just looked at the financials and approved it. So on one hand, you could say, if a guy like Paratici, who has this great eye for scouting, wanted these players twice, there's got to be something there. If you're cynical against Juve, you're going to be like, hey, this is how he helped them bring in these two players there. At the end of the day, as always, the pitch decides what's going to happen. But I'm going to say for Spurs fans, there is definitely some upside here. I think even Bentancur, the type of midfielder that he is, could do pretty well with Conte. But as someone, me, who's invested in Kulusevski doing very well, I think him going to Spurs and having Antonio Conte managing him certainly makes a big difference. Okay, so let's switch gears. Alex, obviously, the Kulusevski sale, I think I looked at it this way. I went into the January window not expecting Juve to be able to spend much. They totally proved me wrong. I thought they were going to have to sacrifice Kulusevski, but to get someone like Scamacca. And I like Scamacca, but Vlahovic is obviously whole other level. So kudos to Juve for working that out. So let me ask you this, Alex. We've talked a lot about Juve's woes at the striker position this season. Every time we do goal over-unders, we really struggle to find a Juve player that we're extremely confident can score over 13 goals. So how much do you think getting the top scorer in the league, and right now he's tied with Immobile, is going to move the needle for Juve this season?
I think it will. I think it will. I'm now thinking Juve gets in the top four, and I think, David, you know that I wasn't really completely on board with that, at least when you gave me an interesting question about, like, Atalanta going for the league versus Juve getting in the top four. Obviously, that was a while back, and things have changed, but I think I was pretty down on Juve at the time. If they didn't get Vlahovic, I still would have my questions, because I can make a case for Atalanta, Milan, Napoli, and Inter, of course. But you know also, David, how I feel about in-league acquisitions. In-league acquisitions, especially if it's going to be in the middle of the season, right? So I'm already struggling for random reasons, of course, but I'm already struggling with an out-of-league acquisition in Romelu Lukaku, someone that I totally backed. And that was an acquisition that happened before the season started. It was a little rushed upon arrival, but still, for the most part. Now, if that happened mid-season, that'd be really tough. But Vlahovic has been beasting this same league. Same league. Now he's just going to, let's be real, an even more talented team. Who needs him, David? Paulo Dybala leads Juventus right now with 7 Serie A goals. It's not enough. It's not enough for Juve's standard. I think it's Morata with 5 after that. So they need him, and they can definitely get in the top 4, even without him, just based on math. But you put in one of the league's absolute best strikers, there's no doubt about it, with some amazing trajectory. Honestly, might even make the teammates around him at Juve play even better. Yeah, I think they get in. I'm just so big on in-league acquisitions in any league, especially in Serie A, when the guy has proven he can play, but also we know it's a league that strikers can certainly do well in. So I think it moves the needle enough. I don't know how much. Of course, they would have to really do well to get past Milan, who are evenly 7 points ahead of them, and Napoli, who are evenly 7 points ahead. Goal differential is really far behind those two clubs. But if I'm Atalanta, I'm a bit nervous now. Yeah, so I do think, David, it does move the needle probably enough to finish in the top 4. What about you?
Yeah, look, Juve needed to turn the page in so many ways. The club was in a funk, no doubt about it. I think we maybe underestimated, you know, the impact of having a reset with Ronaldo leaving when he did. I think the team going into the season with that uncertainty. To Allegri's credit, you know, he had gotten them back on track, but there was just a malaise around Juve, the Chiesa injury, the Dybala contract negotiation. Stalling, you know, although fans could go to the stadium again, the Juve stadium, who usually was a fortress and a huge asset for Juve, there was very few, there was a lot of fans missing at many games. Juve absolutely needed to reset. And to me, this transfer window absolutely did. You know, even beyond this season, I think it absolutely positioned them to be a serious challenger to Inter next season. If you're already looking past this season and looking to the future, it's hard to argue that Juve and Inter aren't going to go in to next season as, you know, the two strongest teams in the league. As far as this season, I think Juve is going to make a significant run to top 4. And obviously Atalanta, they're not that much further ahead than Juve. They're 1 point, but they have 1 less game. So let's say if Atalanta win that, they're up 4 points. They are 7 behind Milan. But Milan, to me, on the other hand, like that malaise that was at Juve, I feel like now has been passed on to Milan, because I think Milan not being more active in the January transfer window might come back to haunt them more than that horrible decision in the Spezia match. Like, look, I didn't think the decision in the Spezia, I think Milan wasn't a Scudetto contender anyway. Obviously, you don't want to lose points that way. But then in January, that was a club that needed a little bit of a shot in the arm. They had lost, you know, Kier and Tomori. Now looks like he's going to come back pretty quickly from this surgery. And they were maybe a little bit victims of the fact that Gabbia and Kalulu looked pretty good for a while at center back. But, you know, now Ibrahimovic is not going to play in the derby. They move Pellegrini. The only addition they bring in is another striker there. So there's a little bit of malaise on Milan. But, you know, 7 points is not to be sneezed at. At the same time, Milan had, I think, a 7-point lead on Inter after the derby, the last one where they drew, and things changed very quickly. We know Atalanta are a second-half team. You know, you could say, well, Atalanta sold Gosens, but to me, Gosens is really a move for next season. To me, Gosens changing teams doesn't change much for Atalanta, and it doesn't change much for Inter. Atalanta done pretty well in his role without him, and they made a few additions. They bring in Boga and the young Romanian striker from Parma, I think Milania is his name, who seemed to probably fit Gasperini well. Boga You know, it's probably one of the five most impactful moves that we saw this January window. And again, we know they peak in the second half of the season, and Pioli's teams tend to not do well in the second half of the season. At the same time, if you're a Milan fan, you should really rejoice in the fact that when I'm skeptical on them, they always prove me wrong recently. I thought they were a sixth place team, fifth, sixth place team going into the season, and they very much exceeded that. So maybe they'll prove me wrong again, but I certainly agree that Vlahovic does put Juve in a strong position to finish in the top four. And but beyond that, I really look at it as now Juve in a lot of ways is back. They really have a nice core, you know, a young core going forward. I mean, the big question mark is De Ligt. They also buy this young defender from Serie B, Gatti, who was really, really highly rated going into at the beginning of the window. All the smart clubs in Serie A, and it was like Napoli, Atalanta, the clubs that I think operate really well. They had all targeted him. That's good sign. Torino, who do really well with center backs and with Juric, had targeted him, and then Juve pulls it off. So if you're a Juve fan, you have to be absolutely thrilled with how this window went. Maybe you won't be as thrilled though with Thousand Names game picks when it comes to Juve. So we have a few games coming up this weekend. I'm excited Serie A's back. If you're on the East Coast in the US, a couple of places you can watch the game. In Boston, I'm going to go hang out at Ducali, which is right at the tail end of the North End by Charlestown. If you're in New York, definitely check out a football factory with our friends, the Milan Club in New York City with Franco and the crew. A really great time there. But let's get to Thousand Names and let's see what he has up his sleeve. First up, perfect timing. Juve hosting Verona. What's going to be Vlahovic's first game? Thousand Names thinks this is going to end 2-2 with a brace by Vlahovic and a brace by Barak. Kudos, by the way, Verona holding on to Barak this window. He's been excellent. And Thousand Names says Cuadrado's going to miss a penalty, which I think he does to needle me. And he says Allegri can't win even when he gets help from the refs and gets support on the transfer window. He says Verona striker Caprari is going to obscure Zaccaria and that Szczęsny is going to make some disastrous mistakes. In Italian, Juve Verona 2-2. Vlahovic doppietta, Barak doppietta, Cuadrado sbaglia rigore, Allegri non vince neanche con gli aiutini e il mercato, Caprari oscura, Zaccaria, Szczęsny disastroso. Look, Verona are a tough team. I'm sure Tudor, who felt like Juve didn't do right by him when Pirlo was there and they had put Pirlo's friend as the higher assistant despite Tudor's seniority. I think Tudor's very motivated, but I also know that Juve really got this nice shot in the arm from the transfer window. So I'm going to go Juve 2-0, and I'm going to go Vlahovic scoring two goals on his first game, and I'm going to say one of them's a penalty. Curious, Bernard and I were going back and forth on who's going to take penalties on Juve. He says other than Dybala, it's going to be Bonucci, and I say absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I'm confident if Dybala is not in the starting lineup and Juve gets a penalty that Vlahovic has taken it. So Bernard, we'll see if that happens. Okay, next up, the big derby, and this time Inter is the home team. Thousand has Inter winning 1-0 goal by Sanchez. Says Lautaro's going to miss a penalty. He says Limone Inzaghi is going to take down Pioli with his bench by making some substitutions. He says Brahim's going to be the worst player on the pitch. And he says De Vrij is going to struggle against Kalulu on set pieces. In Italian, Inter Milan 1-0. Sanchez, Lautaro sbaglia rigore, Limone batte Pioli coi cambi, Brahim peggiore in campo, De Vrij soffre Kalulu sui piazzati. I always seem to go draw for this match. Look, I think Inter is going to win the Scudetto pretty comfortably, regardless of what happens in this match. If they win it, it's totally over. So I don't think that's what's going to happen. I do think Milan have been gritty and they're going to surprise us. So I'm going to go 1-1. I'll give a goal to Giroud and I'll give a goal to Barella. Last match, Napoli traveling to Venezia, and he says Napoli are going to win 2-0, brace by Insigne, and he says the captain's going to finally score a goal that's not off a penalty this season. He says Zanetti is gonna struggle against the master Luciano Spalletti, and that Juan Jesus deserves to be called up to the national team. All joking aside, Juan Jesus has been surprisingly good this season. He had one bad game with an own goal right after Napoli outsider praised them on the pod, so our usual jinx. But aside from that, Juan Jesus has actually been good this season. It goes to show if certain managers, and Spalletti has managed them before, can get out of players more. Let's see. I'm going to go I like Venezia. I'm going to go though Napoli 1-0. Goal by Osimhen. Okay, before we get to our patrons, we are going to do our first interview. So I'm going to introduce the first-time guest, Ricardo Spada. I've been wanting to interview him for a while. He's my favorite, one of my favorite Juve fans on Twitter. Really, really great take. One of the reasons that I wanted to bring him on is kind of like me. He works in finance, so he can kind of give you a little bit of a background on these deals. We're around the same age. I really, really enjoyed this interview. I tell you, I got a few aces up my sleeve with some new guests. Next week, we're going to do a really, really cool segment on Palermo president Zamparini, who passed away. I've been really excited. I got a really great guest from Sicily for that. Pretty energized by the pod. I really do appreciate people's support. So here's Ricardo Spada, the first of a slew of first-time guests we'll have on in the coming months. Okay, guys. So I wanted to kind of throw a curveball today. We're going to do a special episode on Juve, and we know Ricardo Pratesi is our go-to guest for that. But I kind of wanted to bring in a new guest. What you'll see this year is we're going to ease in a few more guests, and I hope they're going to be of the caliber of the next person we bring on. And based in Italy, just to give you a little bit more of an authentic feel on calcio. So our next guest is Ricardo Spada. I've been following him on Twitter for quite some time. His handle is at Rick Spada. He is a fan, I guess, of a Family Guy because he has a avatar from there. But he really is one of the most knowledgeable Juve fans around. Like me, he does have a background in finance. So with what's been happening with Juve, I figured it would be a good time to bring it on. So Ricardo, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you before we started recording. Benvenuto to Calcio Land. We look forward to chatting calcio with you.
Grazie mille, David. Grazie mille, and thank you for inviting me to your podcast. It's an honor.
Okay, well, listen, since it's your first time here, let's give our listeners a little background on you. We were chatting before. You used to go to a ton of Juve games at the stadium. You've been one game this year. You're based in Milano, but you're a big, big Juve fan. So let me ask you this. I also grew up as a Juve fan. So tell me a little bit, who, when you think of Juve over the years, who are some of your favorite players and why?
Oh, well, that's an easy question for me, David, because most of my favorite players are linked to the great Antonio Conte era. Arturo Vidal probably is really the one I would have never sold, and probably the one that has been in my heart for the most of time. With the coach, as well as Conte, Arturo was is the one that most represented our comeback after the relegation to Serie B, so the renaissance of Juventus. And also, you know, he was not the classical boy scout. No, there's always been a lot of rumors around his private life, yeah. But on the pitch, Arturo has always been the last one to give up the fight, and I really have a kind of bias toward this player. In fact, probably another one that I loved even for a small period has been Carlitos, Tevez.
Yeah.
He's been, you know, it was, I remember it was many years that Marotta was struggling to buy bring a striker to Torino. And Tevez was probably the first big one that we managed to bring in. And even, I mean, the price, we paid him not a lot. But in the end, I mean, it was a beautiful, really beautiful player, beautiful player. Unfortunately, we have seen him for not so many years, but I loved Carlitos really a lot. And then another one with the same, probably the same, even if not a Latino, he had the same attitude, was Gianluca Vialli, definitely. When I was much younger than now, Gianluca was really my favorite player, because he was giving everything on the pitch, and he was really a fair player, as he is a fair man now. Then, of course, we have Alessandro Del Piero. How can't we name it? We have Pirlo, we have Pogba, all beautiful guys. And then, you know, there's one that you know how much I was believing in Kulusevski. So
yeah. And you and me both. So we'll definitely get to him. What a great list. I love it. Very, very good. I love Tevez too. I have to say, of the players we saw in Serie A in recent years, that was one guy I would have liked to see more. And I think he fit the Juve DNA just incredibly well. So absolutely fantastic list. And like you, Luca, I think we're around the same age. I remember when Vialli went to Juve, how excited I was when they signed him. Indeed. What a great player he was. Okay, so let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit more about the present moment. So like me, you have a background in finance. I got to be honest, I didn't think Juve had a chance at getting Vlahovic this transfer window, but they did. I've been wrong. I didn't think they would get Higuain. I didn't think they would get Ronaldo, and they did it all three times. So let me ask you this. How surprised are you that Juve was able to pull off this deal financially, and also to get a guy who's at the top of the capocannoniere list, you know, mid-season, is almost unheard of. And on top of that, from a bitter rival, I'm sure Juve was the last place Fiorentina would have liked to see him. So considering all these factors, how surprised are you that Vlahovic made it to Juve?
Honestly, I was very, very surprised. I mean, I was really trusting Arriva Bene when he was saying that the cash coming from the capital increase was meant to cover the debt and not to be spent on players. And to be honest, I still think that at the time he was saying that, he was saying the truth. I have the feeling that the stakeholder, probably the Agnelli family, you know, gave an unexpected green light, because this is really the one on Vlahovic, which is really an all-in. I mean, now we are all in and we have to cross the fingers. So we are in a position where we can't miss our targets. And, you know, remember that missing the targets should be an option in sports. Otherwise, it's no more sports. It would be science, no? So having said that, I am surprised. I was not expecting it at all. But also now I can't wait to see Dujan. I think is probably the only one Haaland-like player in the panorama. When I say Haaland-like, I mean that he does everything with so much strength and power, you know, which seems to be the only way to be a striker in 2022, no? And so probably I think that the fact is that the deal probably was now or never. So that's why I guess we pulled the trigger. Probably if we didn't pull the trigger now, I'm not sure that we would have been able to get Vlahovic at zero at the end of his contract.
Very interesting. And I'm with you. I thought I had the same reaction when Arriva Bene said those things. And I think you're right. I feel like maybe something changed. I think Juve really needed, Scossa really needed to change the trajectory and the narrative around them. So that's what they did. So very well said there. Now, one of the things that I really like about you is you're a big fan, but you're also pretty objective. And you've been very concerned with the fact that Allegri came back, especially on such a huge long-term deal. And let's be honest, I would say Allegri's track record with most young players isn't particularly great. So are you a little bit concerned? And we're going to get to Kulusevski in a second because I want to get your thoughts. But, you know, Kulusevski was dominating at Parma. I thought he was literally one of the best players in the league. Came at Juve, not so much. Do you think there's any chance that Allegri could stifle the growth of Vlahovic? Or do you think Vlahovic is just so good he can transcend that?
Good point, David. You know that, as I said during the introduction, you follow me on Twitter, and so you know what I think. I was concerned about Allegri 3 years ago. Probably, to be honest, I was concerned about Allegri even 5 years ago. At the time, he was winning, and the fact is that Allegri came back exactly with the same idea and the same style, is very confident. Is very stable on his thought and on his conviction. And I have the feeling that he really never asked to himself a question or tried really to raise a doubt on his conviction and try to evolve tactically speaking. So it's clear that. Probably I can't believe that he's the best one right now to get the most out of Dusan, because we have, as of today, we have almost no offensive game. And Vlahovic, I mean, is not a wizard, he's a player. He needs to receive a ball to score a goal. So we need to create occasion, which means that we need to evolve tactically speaking as a team. So bottom line, my thought on Allegri is that Allegri is a great, great manager, possibly not the best one for this specific point in the cycle of Juventus. Now we are at the point of the cycle where we need to rebuild from scratch,
yeah,
where we need to recreate something. And probably this is just no more or have never been the job of Allegri. There are other kind of coaches that could, in theory, have been better for this kind of job. We wanted, but this was clearly a one-man decision taken by Andrea Agnelli to bring back Allegri, because he wants to find a comfort zone he was sitting on in the previous year, but it is not in line with the way the team is built, because the team is built to for innovation, to create a new Juventus, and on the coach side, we want to find a comfort zone that doesn't exist anymore. So I think that Vlahovic, I hope that Vlahovic will be great. I hope that I'm totally wrong with this, but at the moment, looking at the current situation, I doubt that this is the manager that can bring out extract the most from him.
Yeah, look, we're completely on the same page here. One thing that I always say is Antonio Conte is a manager that takes you from A to B. So you're looking to rebuild, you're looking to start winning. That's the guy you bring on. If you want to keep that cycle going, so going from B to C and maybe taking a little bit further, Allegri is a great manager for that. So I completely agree with you there. We're going to get to Conte at the end because I know you're a big fan and your first answer pretty much gave that away. So let's talk a little bit about Kulusevski, because this is tough topic for me because I really, really loved Kulusevski at Parma. I was so impressed with him. You know, I know a few people that, you know, are very involved with calcio, and they were like, man, Juve just pulled an unbelievable deal getting this player. He brings so much to the table that they're lacking, and it really didn't work out. You know, one of my favorite players that joined Juve years ago was Isla Rudinese, that I thought was just an amazing player there, and I thought this guy was going to be great at Juve, and he was a total bust, and I see a lot of parallels between the two. So tell me a little bit what you make about Kulusevski. That is, does it make you sad that, you know, with this loan with option, he's probably not going to come back to Juve? And what do you think went wrong for him at the club?
I'm suffering, my friend, because this is really probably my biggest delusion. You know, I was really following this guy since the Primavera times at Atalanta. And just to tell you one funny thing, I bought him for the first time for my fantasy football team, you know, Fantacalcio. And I bought him for the first time in 2018, 2019, when he was still at Atalanta, and he was already in my roster. He played 10 minutes of a garbage time in a Frosinone Atalanta. I was so excited about the guy because I was following him since the Primavera time in Atalanta, and he was really spectacular. Then at Parma, I was not surprised at all about his impact, because that was exactly what I was expecting from him. And when we announced the deal, I was the happiest guy in town, man. Believe me. In my mind, I mean, it was our Kevin De Bruyne. I was already dreaming him lifting the third UCL. And then we know what happened. I mean, there was responsibilities here and there. Also, his own responsibility, of course. There has been an unexpected lack of personality. I thought he became really shy. I mean, he was hiding from the ball, apparently. And on top of that, we have also to say on the other side that he has been for 1 year and a half in two Juventus, the Allegri's Juventus and Pirlo's Juventus, that were both teams where more or less nothing was really working, you know?
Yeah.
So that's not ideal for a young player like him. So honestly, the regret is that, in my opinion, we have never tested him as a mezzala. How do you say mezzala in
well,
English?
That's you know, we love to use the mezzala term because it sounds so much better. Okay. So yeah, I mean, some people, it's not really a box to box or how they use some of those terms. I think mezzala is just such a great term for it. So I agree with you.
So let's use mezzala. In 1 year and a half, we have never tested him as a mezzala. We have always used him as a striker, which is not his role at all, as a seconda punta almost. But I still believe that honestly, Kulu was the best passer in the roster, was the one with more vision and verticalization capacity. And his stats says this, because if we look at Kulusevski's stats are not that bad. I still believe that in his career, he will consecrate in a different role than the one he played so far. I'm really a strong believer, maybe even a trequartista, because if he has some field, some space in front of him, I mean, he's the best one for the last pass, in my opinion. And he sees spaces. So now, the conclusion, what happened now is that the solution for him was probably the best for everyone at this stage. It was already
going to Conte, I think, is pretty good for him. I think Conte is going to be really, really good for him, because I hope he succeeds. And I think Conte is just perfect for him right now.
He's perfect, definitely. And there was no project on him at all at Juve. So he was becoming the new Bernardeschi. So it's better to sell now. Better to sell now than to have an asset that's worth zero in 1 year.
Yeah, and look, I think look, like you said, Kulusevski has to own a lot of the fact that didn't work out at Juve, but I really think he wasn't helped by the fact Juve also bought Chiesa, and I think that kind of maybe trying to integrate both at the same time was going to be pretty tough. So well said there, but I do hope things work out with him, with Conte. So let's talk a little bit about Dybala, and I'm very curious to get your thoughts there. Look, I think Dybala is a wonderful player, but there are definitely question marks with him, not just health, like how does he fit on the pitch? So let's look at it in two ways. A, before Vlahovic arrived, what was your thought on Dybala? Would you have made a very significant financial commitment to him, or would you have taken the chance of losing him for nothing? And now that Vlahovic is on board, how much of your opinion on what Juve should do with Dybala changes, if it does at all?
No, but look, my thought on Dybala is actually unchanged before and after the purchase of Dusan, the arrival of Dusan, because honestly, the answer, if I wanna overpay to keep Dybala at Juve, I would say no, but not because it's not my money. I mean, so in theory, I don't care, but it's really a matter of what he can give. I think his cycle at Juve has been very, very good, but maybe it could come to an end. I mean, let's put it this way: if he stays, I'm happy. If he leaves, that's fine. It won't be for me too dramatic. It would be bad to see him at Inter, of course, but I would not at this stage. I would not overpay to keep him. It is a kind of atypical player, very difficult to be combined with other players, because he tends to occupy spaces which often are in overlapping with other guys. It happens recently with some of the of other players. One of them is probably even Kulu. So, I would not overpay to keep him. Let's say, yeah, he should also accept a fair deal, because I think we are proposing him a reasonable condition to stay. And the guy has played like 20 minutes in the last 2 years, so could be a bit humble and say, okay, I stay. Even losing him at zero, but sooner or later it's going to happen also to you, eh? Because we have bought a lot of player around at parametro zero, and sooner or later we have to pay the bill. So
for sure. No, I think that's a very valid perspective, for sure. You know, to me, it wasn't just the money that they were offering Dybala. It was like a 5-year deal. To me, sounded a little bit like folly, and it sounds like Juve maybe realized that was maybe a little bit too far. So I want to ask you about De Ligt, because I think he's a very important player for Juve's future, because now you look, Vlahovic is on board. We have Locatelli, who I think has been a good Juve player so far. We have Chiesa. There is a nice core that Juve can build around, and hopefully De Ligt will be part of it. But, you know, he has Raiola as an agent, and that cuts both ways. Sometimes it works to Juve's advantage because they have a great relationship with him, and other times it comes back to bite you. So how important is De Ligt for Juve's future, and what do you make of his performances since he arrived at the club?
Well, it should not have been that important if we would have kept Romero and Demiral, probably. But since we sold both of them, I think that keeping De Ligt is really crucial now. It's the future of the defense, and the guy is also growing, because as well as others, he's so far he has played probably not in the best shaped Juventus of the last 10 years. So, you know, but nevertheless, I think that his performance has been more than sufficient I mean, he's been famous during his first year. Do you remember? It was like touching the ball with the hands almost every game his first year at Juventus. But in the end, the part of this joke made in particular by our other tifosi of other teams, his defensive performance was always consistent and even fairly good. So I really believe that we should try to keep him with us, leaving aside the financial aspect, because maybe De Ligt is a guy where we might see an outrageously good bid for him. But leaving aside the financial things, talking about the pitch, I want De Ligt in the team, definitely.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of his. He's been very unlucky at Juve, and I think really the best is yet to come for him there, and I'm very curious to see how it goes. So let's close on this.
And excuse me, David. And his girlfriend is beautiful.
Okay.
So I want to keep following her on Instagram. So it's important.
Very important. All right. So let's close on this. So you opened saying how much you admired Vidal and the Conte. I've seen your tweets. You are very, I think you were the only person other than me that I follow on Twitter going into the season that was very convinced that Inter was going to win again. And I know one of the reasons why you said that is you said Conte's spirit is still with these players for a while. They are still hearing that Conte bark in their ears there. I think he's one of the greatest coaches I've ever seen in any sport. I really think the world of Conte. By the same token, I think the world of Marotta as a sporting director. I think he was the main reason that Juve had the run that they did. So let me ask you this. If you could bring back just one of these two at the club, Conte or Marotta, who would you bring back and why?
So, hard question, mate. It's like picking between mom and dad. But of course, I would bring them. I would bring back both of them, but I have to choose. And if I have to pick one, I pick Antonio, because as we say in Italy, stai sfondando una porta aperta. So you're pushing an open door. Is the best. I think he is the best. And without him, even Marotta probably would have had the same success. So if we look in practice, also Marotta, also Conte has been the first pick also for Marotta. And when Marotta left and went to Inter, his first pick has been Conte. He is the reason of probably the reason of his success. Then I will never discuss the ability of Marotta as a general manager. He's really, really, really good. And I believe that we would need someone like Marotta, because in my opinion, Agnelli should be less engaged and he should go back to a more managerial structure where the president does the president and not the executive. And instead, Agnelli, since Marotta left, he decided to put himself at the center of the stage. So he wanted to take decision, to actively participate to too many things. And I honestly prefer to have managers. And let's see Arrivabene. To be honest, on Arrivabene, I was a bit skeptical about him. And honestly, I still have my doubts. But he's gaining momentum. Is gaining credibility. Now he did a beautiful mercato and everybody is super happy. He has been quite bold talking about the Dybala contract. And, you know, Tifosi likes this kind of direct talks. But from a managerial standpoint, you might agree that it's not always the best strategy. In the end, to answer your question, I would bring back Antonio. And to be honest, I still hope that he will come back one day. We didn't left each other with in the best way possible, because when you leave Juve, It's always difficult, in particular if you go to Inter, but he's just a professional. I mean, it's a manager. It's not a fan, and people have to accept it.
Well, listen, I'm old enough to remember Trapattoni and Lippi coming back to Juve, so non c'è due senza tre, so you never know. But Riccardo, I can't thank you enough. I'm very excited. You are the first new guest that we've had in the new year, and we're going to have a few this year. So thank you so much for doing such a wonderful job. Your English is very, very good. Your knowledge is superb. I really like that now I put a voice to your tweets, so I hope you had a good time too, and that we can have you back on as one of our Juve guests throughout the season. So thank you so much for doing this today. You did a great job. I had a great time.
Thanks a lot, David. Bye-bye. Thank you all.
Okay, so that was our first Juve guest of the day. Before we get to Riccardo Pratesi, we're going to do a special part of the pod for patrons. If you enjoy listening to us on Friday, we do have an episode on Tuesday. Tuesdays just for patrons. We also have some articles, if you enjoy that, with different tiers. You get to ask us questions on the Friday pod and on the Tuesday pod as well. And it really is an awesome community of like-minded Calcio fans, very respectful. It's really a great place to be.
Well, we couldn't do an episode focused on Juve without bringing on the next guest, my good friend Riccardo Pratesi, who's been on the pod many, many times. He used to cover Juve and the Italian national team for Gazzetta dello Sport, which I still read religiously every day. And now on Gazzetta, he is covering more American sports, which he does a fantastic job. So today with Riccardo, we're going to talk mainly about Juve, and then we're going to close a little bit on Tom Brady to get his thoughts. So Riccardo, it's always a real pleasure to chat calcio and a little bit NFL with you today. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So let's start here. Juve, this was not a great season. We had Ronaldo leave at the last second. There were some struggles. The team going into the January window was on the outside looking in for Champions League spot. We saw, although fans were able to go back to the stadium, Juve Stadium, which was usually a fortress for Juve. There just wasn't a lot of positive buzz around Juve, but to their credit, I think they definitely changed that a lot with this January transfer window. So let me ask you, Riccardo, someone who covered them closely and is very familiar with Juve as a club, were you surprised by what they did during this January window?
A lot. Very surprised. I didn't expect any substantial addition, and out of the blue, they brought in a stud like Vlahovic and a complementary player that's supposed to be very helpful, like Zakaria. Also, to be honest, they were able to do pretty good job in terms of exits too, because honestly, Ramsey had no meaning playing for Juventus anymore. And they were able to send it to the Rangers Glasgow. And they sent a couple of players to the Tottenham Hotspurs. Conte and Paratici, Tottenham Hotspurs, Kulusevski and Bentancur, that I really think they both underperformed badly this season. And so they were not part of the future plan for Allegri. So really surprised. Vlahovic is a stud. He scored like 17 goals, if I'm not wrong. He's at the top of the scorers with Immobile in Serie A. We're talking about exactly the player that they were missing, in my opinion. A scorer, a striker. They have not been able to, have so many chances per game this season. They don't have a great midfield, so they don't create much. So they really needed the guy who were able to capitalize when the opportunity came in the box. And I do think he's a Vlahovic is a real number nine. He's a guy can finalize the action for Juventus, and he's a scorer. They need a guy who is, you know, who's ruthless, and he's also a very young player. So he's a mover that it looks good, you know, yeah, to make the top four right now, but also looks good in perspective, especially if you pair him in the future with Chiesa. I mean, I think they are going to form pretty good couple, pretty good pair of forward going forward. Both very talented, very different. They complement each other and they are young. So really good, very good transfer market window for Juventus. And Zaccaria, I think, I don't know how good he is, but I mean, I saw him playing for Switzerland. And I think he brings the physicality that was much needed in that midfield that will allow Allegri to play even more strikers, because he can really bring that physicality that they were missing. And also he's a guy who move with or without the ball. So it should be interesting to see if he can provide also, like McKinney, some goals for Juventus. They really need the midfielders to bring some goals, because they didn't do that much so far.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I'm not that familiar with Zaccaria either, but it seems to me that he's maybe bringing to the table what Juve has been lacking since Matuidi left. I think they've been kind of missing that type of player. And I totally agree with you. It's not just a move for this season. To me, Juve really made a statement that they want to keep up with Inter next season, and we'll get to that at the end. But I want to talk a little bit more about Vlahovic. Obviously, when you get the leading player in the Cup Cannoniere race mid-season, I can't remember a time that's happened in Serie A. I mean, we had Piontek that one year where he was great at Genoa going to Milan, but that felt a little bit different. So obviously a huge impact. So I want to ask you this, though. We have seen, and Kulusevski is just the latest one, how for some young players, you know, going to Juventus is not always the easiest place to succeed. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about De Ligt too on the pod, and the way you put it is like Juve really needed De Ligt to be really exceptional and great, and probably what they got is more a very good version, not a great version. Do you think there are legitimate concerns? And I'm thinking more with what happened with Kulusevski, who was so dominant at Parma, that Vlahovic is going to have a hard time translating that success to Juve, or do you think he's just very different in that regard?
I think he's different. I think it's always a mystery the way a young player who is used to play in a little market. I mean, I'm from Tuscany, so Firenze is not exactly as very small market, but you know, yeah. Fiorentina is a tradition or whatever, but still the expectation for Fiorentina is very different than the expectation for Juventus. I guess what I mean is clear, it's crystal clear. Anyway, it's always a mystery to see how a player will adjust in a big market, in a big club where the expectations are huge and the pressure is so big. But having said that, I think for a striker, pure striker, I mean, it's going to be much easier than for a guy like Kulusevski, that even right now, honestly, I don't know exactly which role plays, because he can play against space in all the attack, in all the up front, but honestly, still didn't have a position that is very, you know, very sure you know what you're going to get from him and which position you're going to play him. I mean, Vlahovic is number nine, and that's what they needed. And I think if the, you know, the team will support him, he will continue to score his goals. And it's only the beginning. He's only scratching the surface of the talent he got. So I think Juventus got a good one here, honestly.
For sure, for sure. So you mentioned how well you think Vlahovic and Chiesa are going to fit together, which we're going to see next season once Chiesa returns. But, you know, there's also the issue with Dybala. And I'm also very curious to see what Vlahovic's arrival really, how it impacts Dybala's contract negotiation if he stays at Juve. So let me ask you this. With Vlahovic on board, how much does your opinion change on what you think Juve should do with Dybala?
It doesn't change. I thought they had to let him go, and I still think they should let him go. And I said that even in your pod a couple of months ago, I guess, when everybody thought it was going to, you know, sign an extension to stay long term with Juventus. I don't think Dybala is the right fit close to Chiesa up front. And I do think that Dybala is too injury prone to be given a huge contract going forward, especially a multi-year contract. If you saw, even with Argentina, he's not playing there. He's never been a difference maker, in my opinion, in Champions League at big time level and with the international national team with Argentina. So I think he's an extremely talented player, in terms of skills, technique, but he's not a guy a difference maker who changed that much. And because of his history of injuries and he's not getting younger, and because they already got Chiesa on roster that is much younger, more athletic, and I think he has a better mindset, he's more ferocious, let's put it in this way, than Dybala, that may be occasionally a little bit soft. I think that they should let him go, even that if that means that they would join the enemy if he's Inter Milan in that case. But I wouldn't mind. Juventus is a building for future. I mean, if you got De Ligt, if you got Locatelli, and if you got Chiesa and Vlahovic, basically you have the fundamental, you know, You have the foundation of a pretty good team going forward because of the young, talented players that now you got on roster.
Yeah, you know, Dybala is not easy to fit tactically. I always had questions on Chiesa and Dybala playing together. In a way, I think it's a shame for Juve that Chiesa got hurt, so they can't know 100% for sure. But as much as I like Dybala as a player, I tend to agree with you. It's also interesting to me how much more decisive Lautaro is for Argentina. He's been a really, really good player for them, and Dybala has never performed at that level for them. And like you said, it's been a while since he's made a huge impact in a big Champions League game. So interesting there. So let's pivot a little bit away from Juve and talk about Inter, because I think Juve made a statement that, you know, they want to try to keep up with Inter, but Inter also made a move of their own during the transfer window that I have to say was kind of reminded me of the way Juve used to operate under Marotta. And it's no surprise that Marotta is at Inter now. They go out and get Gerson's, which to me feels more like a move for next season, but a really nice addition there. Do you kind of see some parallels between this current Inter and Juve, the first two seasons under Conte, which you covered closely there, beyond the fact that Marotta's there? Could you see Inter going on a long run of Scudetti, similar, maybe not quite as long as Juve's, but on a streak for a little while?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I think it's a little bit of the situation it was at AC Milan when Sacchi left and Capello came in. So Capello get advantage of the work Sacchi did. And with the same group of players, they just needed to relax a little bit. They could still win, but it's not going to last forever. The same what happened to Juventus more recently. Conte did a wonderful job. Then Allegri came in, get advantage of the job Conte have done. And again, the players needed, you know, to be a little bit more relaxed after they were coached by a guy who was obsessed. Sacchi and Conte were obsessed. Capello and Allegri are more, you know, the common sense coaches that make things a little bit easier. And I think Inzaghi is the, you know, has the same mindset, is the same kind of coach, and is doing so well for Inter. But I think the conditions outside the Inter are very different now in terms of, first of all, we don't know about the stability and financial stability of the club. Mm-hmm. Because I, again, remember that they had to sell Lukaku at the beginning of the season. I mean, everybody were worried back then. Then, you know, Marotta was able to bring in Dzeko, that has been so good for them. They had other good signing, Dumfries, now Gosens. I mean, Perisic's contract is expiring at the end of the season. So, like you said, makes a lot of sense to bring in a guy who can be the present, but mostly the future of the club. But at the same time, I don't see, again, I don't know about the stability of the club in terms of financials. And I don't see a huge gap in that situation from Inter and the other clubs, especially again if Juventus will be able to bounce back, not this year, but going forward. So, no, I don't. The question is no. I think Inter is going to win Scudetto, and probably it's going to be no thriller. But looking forward, I still want to see, you know, what's going on, and I'm not sure to bet on them. Even for the next few years.
Yeah, you know, to me, the fact that Juve has Exor legacy ownership that has owned the club for so long and has the ability to pump in cash is such a huge competitive advantage. It always was, but, you know, there was Moratti at Inter for a while who was willing to spend a lot. Obviously, Berlusconi at Milan. And once they both left the scene, Juve, to me, has just an incredible advantage there. So I want to ask you about Insigne. Now, you cover American sports. You don't cover MLS, but you understand American sports really well. You visited all the arenas in the NBA. You know the states very well. Like you sound like an American guy even when I talk to you. So let me ask you this: what did you make of the news that Insigne was going in MLS when, you know, he's 31 years old, was a starter on the team that recently won the Euro? What did you make of this move?
Well, I was surprised, almost stunned, to be honest with you. I covered a few games of Major League Soccer in America back then when I was living there as a reporter for Gazzetta dello Sport and Sky Sports, as a correspondent, to be honest, exactly. And for example, I covered Giovinco, that he was playing for Toronto, exactly like Insigne is going to play in Canada for Toronto. So I can see some similarities. And I remember interviewing Giovinco, asking him why. Because Giovinco, like Insigne, was still in his prime. Giovinco, I guess, was even younger. And he was playing for Juventus before moving to U.S. So basically left one of the main leagues in Europe to go to a league that is a little bit of an afterthought, even if, you got very well paid there in US or again in American League in this case, playing for a Canadian team. I mean, Giovinco told me that, the money were a big factor. There was not so much pressure playing there, comparing it to what he was used to, and that was, in his opinion, good for, you know, his quality of his life. And his family wanted to basically try a different experience, life experience, not only, of course, sport experience. And they did this were basically the reasons. Also, I mean, it was a difference maker there because it was much better than the opponents. It was still in his prime and, you know, MLS is usually, don't get offended by that. I just like to call it like I see it, but a cemetery of elephant, if you know what I mean. In terms of big time player that go there at the end of the career just to rake up some money and whatever. I mean, we had the exception, I mean, with, you know, Ibrahimovic that has been able to come back to Europe and to prove that he could be a different maker. But for example, I remember interviewing Kaká when he was playing for the Orlando in Major League Soccer. And again, Kaká was at the end of his career. He was a wonderful player, but in front of his sunset. So it made a lot of sense to go to US, you know, pick up the money on the table, enjoy a different experience, and then retire. I mean, in terms of Giovinco and Insigne, I mean, the move is a little bit more surprising because, once again, these guys are still in their prime, and Insigne is one of the best players for the national team for Italy, that they just won the Euro. And if they make it to the World Cup, it would be one of the top players for Roberto Mancini. So, yeah, it's surprising for me. I remember Giovinco totally lost the national team because the logistic is not easy, because it's not easy to follow a player who plays overseas, because, they, you know, again, you play down to the competition that is not necessarily the best competition. And so it's not necessarily training you at your best. And so I don't know. I think it's a risky move for Insigne, but if he likes it, good for him.
Yeah, very interesting. Look, I think players like Insigne, and maybe we'll see Belotti and other guys in year past on Bosman deals, maybe stay in Italy. But I just don't think there's a huge appetite for huge salaries for older players anymore. But I'm very curious to see how it goes there. But I'm not so sure Insigne is definitely going to do better than Giovinco at Toronto, because Giovinco was really pretty brilliant there. And speaking of brilliant, I do want to ask you about Tom Brady. You cover brilliantly the NFL for Gazzetta dello Sport. I know basket is really more your big passion, but you're really great with the NFL as well. And because, you know, you cover calcio, I think you have like a really good perspective. I feel like American people maybe overrate the influence of the NFL outside of the US, although that's kind of changing. So I think you're a really good person to ask this question. You're a huge sports fan. We're around the same age. I have to say, you know, I've lived in Boston all of Brady's career. It's incredible that his first game here for the Pats was 2 weeks after 9/11. That just really blew me away. I have to say he's without a doubt, regardless of any sport, one of the greatest athletes I've ever seen. So tell me a little bit if you agree. Where do you kind of, when you think of the greatest athletes that you've seen in your life, is Brady up there?
Absolutely. Oh, first of all, I'm very equal in terms of the sports I like the most, I guess, soccer, calcio, American football and basketball are more or less the same for me. In my podium, let's put it in this way, with tennis, my wild card, just to use a term for tennis experts. Having said that, I think Tom Brady is the best ever in American football, the GOAT. The expression that is most used in US, and but also is the GOAT in terms of any American sport athlete ever who played in group sport. I mean, I don't consider, you know, the guys who play the individual sport, because, you know, you can say Michael Phelps, you can say, I don't know, Tiger Woods or whatever. I mean, so many unbelievable sportsmen, athletes that excelled in individual sport. But if you focus just on team sports, American team sports, so we are talking about American football, baseball, hockey, and basketball mainly, I think it's the best ever to do it. So I would put him in a tire just by himself. And he's a tire that is ahead of a tire with Michael Jordan in the NBA, Babe Ruth in baseball, and Wayne Gretzky in NHL in hockey. Why? Because, I mean, first of all, he won 7 Super Bowl, and there is no franchise in America won 7th Super Bowl. Basically, he won more than all the 32 franchises in US. I mean, that's crazy, absolutely nuts. Basically, the most have been six rings for the most successful franchises, and he won 7. And he played in 10 Super Bowl. That
absolutely which is incredible.
Yeah, it's insane. It doesn't make any sense, actually. And also, if you look at when he what he counts the most, that is winning in playoff, he got 35 quarterback wins. If you want just to put it in perspective, this number that may say nothing to you at the first sight, the second most successful quarterback ever in the history of the NFL is Joe Montana, Joe Cool, that he won 16 games, and Tom Brady 35. So more than a double, considering the second best. I mean, he's in a top tier by himself. I don't think really. And winning for two different franchises, I mean, in my opinion, even strength is case for the best ever for in all American sports, because once again, it was not a product of the Patriots system. It was not only a product of Bill Belichick, that, of course,
has for his sure.
Merits. Yeah, he has his merits.
Well, yeah, I think you and I are on the same page on that one for sure.
I mean, winning for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that it was the worst franchise percentage-wise in terms of winning in all American sports, in the four major leagues of American sports. I mean, it's unreal. And even this season, he left the league, he retired, having the most yard thrown this year. He was the best quarterback in terms of yards, in terms of touchdowns. I mean, he had an MVP kind caliber season. Probably Aaron Rodgers going to win. I think he deserved. Brady is probably going to finish second. And we are talking a guy who is 44. So, yeah. I mean, it's really unreal, and I think it should deserve a standing ovation for everybody who really likes sports. I can say that. I've never been a New England Patriots fan, so I'm not biased on that. I just enjoy the greatness, and if you like sports, you have to like greatness. You have to applaud greatness and all the emotion that a player like Tom Brady gave us during the year, season by season.
Yeah, absolutely. And that stat that you had on the wins versus Montana, like on top of that, Brady had a ton of buys, in the first round of the playoffs for being a number one seed. So it's just incredible. So let's close on this. I've been thinking if there's even, somewhat of a similar player in Italian football, like historically, that compares. I mean, the only one I could kind of latch onto a little bit was Maldini with his longevity and all. Is there anyone that you even see like remotely comparable to what Brady has achieved? Because the way you laid it out, it's really an incredible resume.
I don't think so. I think you can talk about soccer worldwide, and you can say the Pelé myth. If you want, you can compare a little bit. But again, I was born in 1975, and honestly, I didn't see much of Pelé. Many, images, back in the days, but I cannot really evaluate properly as a journalist how good he was. I know that he was like a myth. It was like a legend, so everybody wanted to compare every upcoming star to him. And then it was Platini, it was Maradona, Van Basten, and now Messi or Ronaldo, and whoever will, come up. I don't know, Mbappé, whoever will stand up going forward. But Pelé has been like the guy everybody in soccer was compared to. But honestly, I don't have the instrument because I didn't live his prime time. I was a child, or anyway, I was not a German, that's for sure back then. So, and I wasn't even born at the beginning. So, honestly, I can compare, and surely there is not an Italian player.
Yeah.
For as many good players that we have in our history, that we can compare to him, because we had so many great players, especially honestly, defenders more. Yeah. Than murder strike, and the defenders, they do not, you know, get the first place in history in terms of
yeah. That's why I went to Maldini with the longevity. But you're totally right, I think Pelé is probably the best comp. But yeah, and I think that says a ton about Brady, because as you said, Calcio and Serie A, we've had some amazing dynasties, great teams, and there's no one really quite like him. So Ricardo, great stuff as always. I really appreciate always chatting with you, your great perspective on Juve, NFL too. So I look forward to chatting with you again during the season. Thanks so much. For all of you that, you know, speak Italian or learning Italian, if you're into American sports, I really mean it. Ricardo's coverage to me of American sports is as good as the stuff you get from Zach Lowe, the guys at the Ringer there. He's really outstanding. So thanks so much, my friend, and look forward to doing it again.
Well, thanks a lot. And next time.